Hello, friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Before we take you to your favorite Sports History Network show, just want to tell you a little bit about some merch that you can pick up that represents your favorite SHN podcast. So far, there's t-shirts, coffee mugs, and even books from some of the authors that do podcasts right here on SHN. Who could buy something better than that than have the history right from the gentleman that you hear talking about it? But we also are adding things each and every day. And where's that store, may you ask? Well, it's at SportsHistoryNetwork.com. Up at the top, there is the SHN merch button. Click on that. It'll take you right to the store, and you can be representing your favorite podcast and show the world that, hey, on the swag that I'm using, it's the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear, Sports History Network, and my favorite podcaster, the Sports History Network store. Shop there today. In this episode, we talk about a big trade that happened in the Windy City long ago, and we bring in one of the big guns from the Sports History Network to talk about it, our resident expert on Chicago football, coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. Welcome to the Pig Pen. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we're going to start off our show on a little bit different note because we have some great news and we have a special guest. And I'm going to bring our guest in here in a second, but I want to tell you a little bit about him. Our guest has been a resource for sports media giants such as Sports Illustrated, the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Tribune, the Daily Southtown, NBC Sunday Night Football, and has appeared on the WGN documentary Football in Chicago, a Comcast sports special on the Chicago Bears. He is recognized as one of the leading authorities on the history of professional football in the country. Joe Ziemba, he's the award-winning author of books, When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL. Another book, Cadets, Cannons, and Legends, The Football History of the Morgan Park Military Academy. Joe Ziemba, welcome to the Pigpen.
Darren, thank you so much, and it's truly an honor to be here with you. I'm always in awe of your program, where I call it a verbal encyclopedia of football. I always learn something new listening to you, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to talk about one of our key topics tonight.
Oh, yes.
I've always been enthralled with the Chicago Cardinals, which means I don't have much going on in my own life, because they've been gone from Chicago for 61 years. But the history is always intriguing. There's always something new to find out about them. And so, thank you again. I'm certainly look forward to our chat today.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Well, since you brought it up, one of the questions I'd like to know, and probably my audience would like to know, is, you know, how did you get so interested in football history, and especially Chicago football history?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed history. But the Cardinals had a little place in my life that had been there forever, but I really didn't realize it or know about it or even acknowledge it. My father was a football coach on the south side of Chicago, and I'd always hear people talking to him about his days playing and learned he was an All-American at a small place called St. Benedict's in Kansas. And from there, he got drafted by the Chicago Cardinals. And things were so different in the NFL back then that when his contract was signed in the 40s, he made $110 a game. Plus, he had to supply his own shoulder pads and shoes. So things have changed quite a bit for us since then. But he never really talked about it too much. But after he passed away, I found his contract, and he never did play a game in the NFL because he got hurt in training camp. And he found out he could make more money coaching high school football than he can make playing in the NFL. So that was amazing as well. Different. So one time, just kind of got an idea. I saw the Chicago Cardinals being mentioned somewhere in the Chicago media and decided to finally look up to what happened with his career. And I found stone walls everywhere. There really wasn't anything about the Cardinals. course, if you could access old newspapers, and this goes back about 20 years, it was difficult to find a place that had all the newspapers, papers. So I would go to libraries and find out what I could. And make my long story short, I decided that I'd make it easier for the next person and do a book on the history of the Cardinals myself, which did come out. It was called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL.
Wow, that is a great story to have. Find out that your father played professional football. That's an amazing thing. And I mean, even though he didn't play, but to make a professional team, especially one like the Cardinals, that is quite a storied franchise. I believe it's the oldest franchise in the NFL. Am I correct there?
It is. The Cardinals go back to 1899. And they were known first as the Morgan Athletic Association. It was just a bunch of kids playing some football in the streets and the shadows of the Chicago stockyards. And from there, they changed names a few times, got the name Cardinals, not from a bird, not from the color of a uniform. It was just the name of their club they started. It was called the Cardinals Athletic Association. So it was all these neat things I was able to find out, which contradicts also some of the NFL history that we see when we learn about the early pro teams. But it was really neat to have that connection with him, to see his name in the Cardinals media guide. I don't know if they still do it, but they would always have the old draft choices in there, and so his name would be in there. But he hurt his knee, as I mentioned. But one of the neat things about my research was that the Cardinals' 1947 championship team had a reunion in Chicago, and I met some of the guys who would have been his teammates, and Billy Duell, who was the star end of the 47 champs, distinctly remembered my father, which I thought, whoa, all this effort is worth it, because he was there, and someone remembered him and remembered his size and what he could do, and so that was really quite the thrill. It made it all worthwhile, even though he never got into a regular NFL game, decided, like I said, knee injury wasn't worth it.
Wow, I'll bet that had to be really, really cool to meet some of those old players, and especially having them remember your father and have some tales to tell. So that is really neat. Well, you have a book about it, the Cardinals. If you can tell us a little bit about that, When Football Was Football.
Yeah, and Football Was Football. I went back to the beginning to what I could find of the Cardinals' origins and took the book all the way through 1960 when the team left Chicago. And that was in March of 1960. So we're talking about 61 years ago. And it was quite the stories that you'd find out about how they traveled and how they got around and how one guy, Chet Bolger, got fined because he went out of his room to buy a razor blade. He didn't have a suit coat on, which is mandatory for the player. So he got fined at 5:30 in the morning buying razor blades and finding out the $2 a day meal money. And I just love that stuff. I love hearing about what the old players did, and always kind of tried to compare it to today's players. Not that today's players would get fined. They probably have someone they hired go down and buy their razor blades. And even going into the championship years of 1947, when the Cardinals won their last championship, which, by the way, is the longest drought now for any professional team if we go back from 47 to today. Then they were back in 1948, and a hideous snowstorm hit Philadelphia when they were playing the Eagles for the second straight year. And another amazing part of that story is the players in both teams were not only shoveling snow off the field, but pulling the tarp off so they could get their game in. And those kinds of interesting things I was always thrilled to find. And there was plenty of them to write a book about. So I've got another one coming out hopefully soon, which will cover the early days of the Bears and the Cardinals in Chicago. So we're wrapping that up. But again, full of a lot of stories and changing a little bit of the NFL history as we go along.
Wow. Well, we'll be looking forward to that one too. You have a podcast on every other week on Sports History Network, and it is also called When Football Is Football. And you really have some fascinating stories on there. I just listened the other day to your Patty Driscoll story, and it was just amazing.
Yeah. The podcast, again, we thank Arnie Chapman of the Sports History Network for allowing me some time and space on there. And in this podcast, we talk about the early days of the Cardinals and the Bears, as well as anything else that might be related to football in Chicago. although it's primarily the Bears and the Cardinals. We've gone into some high school stuff and, of course, individual profiles of players like Patty Driscoll, Chet Bolger, who I mentioned earlier, who was quite a character in the 40s for the Cardinals, Ernie Nevers, who still holds the NFL record for most points scored in a game, although his record of 6 touchdowns in a game was just tied this past season once again. So we try and find things that might be useful and might be entertaining for folks who would like to take a quick trip back in time to the earlier days of the National Football League.
Well, you definitely do that with great storytelling, and it's very enjoyable to listen to. I think I've listened to every single one of them, and it's really enjoyable. And make sure everybody, as soon as you get done with this podcast, go over and check out some of Joe's great Chicago stories that he has on there, because they are really good. But we have you here for a certain topic today, because this is the February 27th episode of our daily podcast, and we have some football news that happened on February 27th, 1959, that had to do with the Chicago Cardinals, and hoping maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this was a great day, not only in Cardinals history, but also NFL history, when one of the leading running backs in the league, Ollie Mattson of the Cardinals, was traded to the Rams for 9 players. And there's so much neat history behind this. The guy who generated the trade on the Rams part was none other than Pete Rozelle, who had been at the University of San Francisco when Ollie Mattson played there. And Rozelle, I believe, was an assistant coach as well as a publicity director. And he had always had his eye on Mattson. And apparently it took 3 days between Rozelle and the owners of the Cardinals to work out some kind of deal. And they finally did, but incomprehensible. 9 players for 1. And Ollie laughed about it later, and he said, well, I don't think the Cardinals got enough for me. So it was kind of funny. But at first, he was a little stunned by it. In later years, he admitted he knew something might have been in the works, but he had been assured by Walter Wolfner, who was the managing director of the Cardinals, that he would not be traded. So Ollie bought a house, and he was doing some repairs on it when he found out he had been traded. And this kind of reminded me of another story, and I'm not going to go off track, I promise, but in the book I did earlier called When Football Was Football, Pat Summerall, the former Cardinal, he also, of course, was a great broadcaster. He did the introduction for it. And when he did his first draft, it came out very critical, not of the book, thank goodness, but of the Cardinals organization. And so wasn't something that could be published. So the publisher asked him, what's going on? This is not what we were looking for. And Pat said, I'm still upset the Cardinals, because I was promised I would not be traded. Within a week, I was traded, I think, to the Giants. So he still was upset about that. And that reminded me of Ollie Mattson here. Here we are, the same guy, Walter Wolfner, telling him, we'll never trade Ollie Mattson. And there it was. So it wasn't so bad for Ollie, because he's from California. He was able to go back there, although it wouldn't be in San Francisco, it'd be in Los Angeles. And so he adjusted. At first, he was kind of upset when it was discussed in the Chicago media. But by the time he got to the afternoon papers in San Francisco, he was quite happy. The fact that the writer of the one article said he could tell Ollie was pleasantly happy with the news that he was going back to California. So that was quite interesting. But yeah, we had not seen anything like it where it would be 9 players for 1. I think there was another trade that was made a few years later with 10 players or so. The Rams might have been involved again with that. But at the time, this was the biggest trade in NFL history.
Wow. The only thing you can even think of in recent history, and I'm talking like the last 25, 30 years, is maybe like the Herschel Walker trade from Dallas,
right, yeah,
Minnesota. But I don't think it was 9 players. I think it was like 7. And we thought that was a big number.
Yes, yes.
Wow. That is definitely a blockbuster trade. That might be the blockbuster of all blockbusters there.
It was. And someone asked Rozelle maybe a month or so later, why the trade? Why don't you just buy them instead of sending 4 of your starters out to Chicago? And he said, well, Wolfner probably wanted about $150,000 in cash for Ollie Mattson. And so he said they couldn't go that way. Still, people thought maybe that the Rams got the better deal getting Ollie Manson for the players that they sent. Some never really made it in the league, but it really didn't help either team. Neither one was very successful during the following season, which would have been 1959. Both teams won two games, and then the Cardinals left Chicago after that season. And Ollie never really reached that early superstardom. He was all pro just about every year during the 1950s. Gained a lot of yards for the Cardinals, but and named also to the NFL's all-decade team. But some say now that he wasn't used properly by the coaches in L.A., and I'm not sure, wasn't around then to see those games, but there was a little bit of bitterness later in life from Ollie because of the trade and what happened to him when he was in L.A.
So sounds like between Ollie Matson and Pat Summerall, you know, leaving the Cardinals organization was a sad time for them. So there had to be something special going on in their Chicago with the Cardinals.
Yeah, they felt that the even though the ownership maybe told a few fibs here and there, that they took care of the players. Other players said, you know, they traveled fairly well. They could live in the neighborhood near the stadium. Ollie Manson bought a house on the south side of Chicago and stayed there. So there was a certain loyalties. Players like Charlie Trippi and Marshall Goldberg from a few years before, who played their entire careers with the Cardinals, which was not usual, but it wasn't unusual. But there did seem to be some player loyalty to the Cardinals back there in the 1950s.
Oh, that's just a great thing for an organization to have when the players don't want to leave. That's quite a testament to them. So that's a great thing. I wanted to bring up something else before I let you go, and because you had kind of an interesting book out. One of your other books, The Cadets, Cannons, and Legends, The Football History of Morgan Park Military Academy. Now, I listened to your podcast on the Football History Dude, your interview on the Football History Dude with Arnie Chapman. And what an interesting book and an interesting school. Now, I'm not from the Chicago area, but if you could tell our listeners a little bit about it and myself, because it's kind of fascinating.
And the school's been around since the 1870s. And it's still there. It's still now Morgan Park Academy. The administration has kept it going all these years through numerous changes, but it was a military academy when it had its powerful football teams from going back through the 1890s through 1959, 1960, and then it dropped its military affiliation, then still continued to have good football teams until 1978 when the school dropped the sport at that time. But again, there's a little connection. My dad, that was the school he coached at, and I grew up on that campus and heard all these stories. And so finally got the idea, this is one of those things where I really would like to research it and get all the big story of how did they do this? How did this little tiny school with, say, 200 students play the major schools in the Chicago area? And I'm talking about the Chicago Public League, the Chicago Catholic League, the big suburban schools, and beat them. And it was just because I think they were able to somehow attract some good talent and keep it going. And the coaching, my dad had a nice winning streak going there in the late 40s when they were 27-4 over a 4-year period. And they it was just a magical time. But also the school that lost, I think, had over 800 people serving in World War II and lost about 50 of them. So there's a lot of neat stories in that book that I was able to bring out, and can never give enough thanks to the folks who maintained and saved the archives at Morgan Park Academy. Apparently many years ago, there was when the school dropped its military affiliation, they were going to get rid of their old records, and some brave individuals salvaged them. And some of the records were literally in garbage cans when a couple of visionaries retained them and started organizing them. And of course, it made my job a little easier telling that story of the Academy football program, but it also maintained that just wonderful history of the Academy. So one can go there and check out if your uncle went there in 1917. Their archives are so incredible, they'll be able to tell you what his grades were and what day he graduated on. So just a real neat thing. And then, of course, to meet some of my dad's older players that played for him, that was always special as well. And being a private school, the rules were a little different than nowadays. teachers could fire an eraser at a guy's head if he was falling asleep in class, or open the windows in the middle of winter in Chicago, which is not pleasant, to make sure that the cadets, as they were called, stayed awake. But they're very loyal again to that school and to the football program over the years. So it was quite a joy and, again, an honor for me to be able to share that story with everyone else about the football program at Morgan Park Military Academy.
Well, it certainly sounds like a great book. And anybody that wants to check out Joe's books, a great place to go and get them is at thesportshistorynetwork.com/podcast When Football Was Football. And it takes you right to Joe Ziemba's site where his podcasts are. And Arnie also has the Amazon links to get Joe's books right there, too. So great resource to get one of Joe's books and read them, or get both those books and read them, because they are amazing. Joe, I really appreciate you coming on. It's kind of short notice, and I appreciate all the great info you gave us today on that great 1959 Chicago Cardinals trade and all the other information you gave us. It's been quite a pleasure, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Darren, and thank you for remembering Ollie Mattson and the Chicago Cardinals. We really appreciate that.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Well, that is awesome to have Joe Ziemba come on and talk about his favorite team, the Chicago Cardinals, and a team his father had played for. That's really cool. And to have a big trade that happened in history, just to have him on, our great, great football historian, has great podcasts, great books. Make sure you check him out. And I'm going to play a little bit of something that Arnie Chapman made up on his trailer for Joe Ziemba's When Football Was Football. Here's like a minute excerpt of that, and we'll be right back with your birthdays of Hall of Famers.
The forgotten history of the NFL has been and will continue to be retrieved and documented for future generations. One of these football detectives is your host, Joe Ziemba. This show, When Football Was Football, is part of the Sports History Network. And Ziemba will be your personal guide on a customized journey through over 100 years of forgotten NFL football history, with emphasis on the Bears and the Cardinals, when both teams were located in Chicago. Each program will focus on a lost or unknown aspect of an individual, team, or event with a connection to the early NFL. Welcome to a time when football was football.
Gosh, we are so honored and blessed to have been able to have Joe Ziemba come on and talk about Chicago Cardinals football history with us tonight, because he is definitely the expert when it comes to that. And we're so fortunate to have him on the Sports History Network. And you've already heard some great talent from the Sports History Network on our podcast. We've had his guests, as Oz Davis of Truly the Goats has been on. Dan Newman, of half of the hosts of the Hello Old Sports podcast, has been on, and he did a wonderful job, too. Coming up, we have even more great Sports History Network guests coming on, some hosts of some great shows, as Warren Rogan is going to join us, and he is quite an experienced podcaster. He's going to be joining us for the number 10s and number 11s coming up in the coming week here, so make sure you check that out. And soon after him, we have Dana Augister of Historically Speaking podcast is going to talk number 12s with us. And then probably about a week after that or so, we will have Aaron Harris of the Football Odyssey on, and that's another great program on the Sports History Network. And don't forget some of our other great guests we've had on. You know, we've had Craig Woodard Sr., Larry Schmidt, Bill Schaefer, both of those last two guys from the Gridiron Uniform Database. And we also had the legendary Upton Bell. And if you hadn't heard that episode a couple days ago, make sure you go check that out on the February 25th episode when we honor his father, Burt Bell. Such great discussions we've had with our guests, and we're really appreciative and honored that they could join us. Now, let's get to your birthdays of Hall of Famers for this February 27th. February 27th, 1932, West Columbia, Texas. Baylor standout tackle Jim Ray Smith arrived into the world. The NFF states that Jim Ray was an All-American picked by the American Football Coaches Association in 1953. The National Football Foundation voters secured Jim Ray Smith's gridiron accomplishments by archiving them in the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1987. After school ended, Smith played 9 years in the NFL with both the Cleveland Browns and the Dallas Cowboys, and he played in 5 Pro Bowls. Great career for that young man. February 27, 1972, East St. Louis, Illinois. Dana Howard, the great linebacker from the University of Illinois, was born. The National Football Foundation describes Dana as a tackling machine. The NFF bio on Howard states that Dana Howard had become the first player in school history to earn a major national award when he received the 1994 Butkus Award as the best linebacker in the nation. Dana was a two-time first-team All-American in both 1993 and had the distinction of unanimous All-American in 1994. When Howard stopped playing collegiate football, he was Illinois' all-time leading tackler with 595 career stops, which was a Big Ten record at the time. Dana Howard was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2018. Dana was picked by the Dallas Cowboys in the 1995 NFL Draft in its fifth round. Howard also spent time with the St. Louis Rams and the Chicago Bears, and he also was known to be played for the Amsterdam Admirals in NFL Europe. We'd like to thank you once again for joining us here today on the podcast, and as you do every day, and we really appreciate that. We also appreciate Joe Ziemba for stopping by and talking about some Chicago Cardinals great blockbuster trade of 1959 with Ollie Mattson. That was quite a pleasure. And make sure you check out his books and his podcast, and check out everybody else on the sportshistorynetwork.com, because there's some great talent on there. I guess we even have another new podcast coming on from some basketball stands of things. So that's a great. We have a couple basketball podcasts in there. So everything to listen to on the Sports History Network in this world of sports. And make sure you check us out at the Pigskin Dispatch /podcast. You can see all our podcasts there, as well as on sportshistorynetwork.com. And but if you want to talk to me or send me an email, make sure you email me at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we'll be glad to listen and read your comments. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.